Thank you for tuning in to the Dust Sign Podcast. My name is Dustin Mader, and I'm a visual artist. I've always been fascinated with the creative muse in others and myself. In tonight's episode, we'll be speaking with the Chickasaw storyteller, Lori Carmichael, about life, legacy, and the narrative of Indian Country. Thank you for coming on tonight, Lori. I really appreciate you being on here.
My pleasure. I'm excited.
I've enjoyed your storytelling, and it is it was a real treat whenever my daughter was really young to see her reaction when she screamed in terror at some of your stories. That it really tickled me. And also being a fellow friend with Greg Rogers, it's fun to kind of talk about him and the stories that you guys share, and the narrative form is so important with the storytellers that it's just a real treat to have you on tonight. Mm-hmm. For folks who are not familiar, can you kind of go into detail about who you are and what do you do?
I am, of course, Lori. I grew up here in Ada, Oklahoma. I never thought I grew up around storytelling until I started doing storytelling and realized that the stories my grandmother told, which were family stories, were the same thing as the stories I tell now. So it was kind of natural for me to go into this role. So I started studying storytelling with my master teacher, Glenda Galvin, in the mid-90s. And I have been storytelling ever since and been able to travel not only through the U.S., but go to China and go to the Middle East and collect stories there, compare them with our stories, and find out that I love all form of storytelling. It's not just native storytelling. It's the world of storytelling.
What inspires you?
When I first started storytelling, what inspired me was probably knowing and feeling how I was doing something that my ancestors did years ago and, decades, centuries. And then whenever I would talk to my grandmother, and I would just, she didn't have to ever say anything because her eyes danced, or the way she smiled. And whenever I would tell her I was going somewhere to storytell, it didn't matter if I was going to a little bitty school or if I was going to a big convention center to tell stories to 100 or 300 people, she would just smile. And I knew it was good for her, and it was good for me, and she really, really did enjoy that. She never brought us up or never told us we do that because we're Indian or we do that because we're Chickasaw, because that's just the way we lived. So I was just doing something that was natural.
Right on. We both, it seems like we maybe not don't tell the same kind of stories in the same way, but we drink from the same creative well.
Mm-hmm.
From the Southeast.
Yeah.
What are you doing to be a good ancestor?
Oh, what am I doing? I hope it is being active in finding someone who can basically take my place. Whether it be my daughter, who is already making me and her daddy sit down in the middle of the floor so she can tell us a story, or if it's working with the apprentices that we have here. Hopefully out of the group, we'll have one. You always hope you have the one that can carry on these stories. And so you want to share these stories, or you want to share how do you research to find stories. So you hope you're giving them the tools and the resources and the confidence that they need to know, listen, you have this gift of story, and we need to share it. And I hope that they, in turn, are always actively looking for someone to take their place, because we're not here forever, and making sure that that our stories have breath and life is critical.
Yeah. Is there something that you're working towards when you're doing your work? And I ask this question a lot with visual artists, and even with Britt Reed, who's a culinary artist. But is there a theme or something that you're working towards, maybe that underpins your work beyond just the standard surface stuff? I mean, what is it that you're working towards?
I guess I am always working towards, without even realizing that's what I'm working towards. And it's probably because of my traveling from here to the Middle East, especially here to the Middle East, is the understanding of we are all alike. Not one culture is more important. Not one story is more important. We all like to think that our culture is more important, and sure. And that's fine to think that. But I think we all, and especially with the way the world is today, and this could be the storyteller in me, how you just want everything to be perfect and in harmony, but to get along, we have to know each other's story. There's a story I tell about two warriors, and they fight and fight and fight until it's so dark they can't see, and they finally decide to take a break until daylight. So to fill the time in those hours, they just talk to each other.
Yeah.
And when you talk to each other, you get to know each other.
Yeah.
And when daybreak hit, they couldn't kill each other because they knew each other's story and they knew each other's struggles. And I think if we all come back to that, understanding of one world, mm-hmm. and we have been gifted with this world, we're supposed to be stewards of this world and of our children, and if our children see us fighting and arguing, then it's just going to continue.
Absolutely.
And I think having that understanding of we are all alike, we are all more alike than we are different. Each culture, each person has stories. We just need to take that time to learn each other's.
I like that, the showing people that shared common narrative. We all have different places we come from, but that's what makes it beautiful. I just kind of think of what my grandmother Caroline would say about how all rivers lead to the ocean and all pathways mm-hmm. lead to the divine, yes. in a sense. And this is another example, the human experience is shared. That's why I think like Akira Kurosawa is one of my favorite film directors, and he was able to translate Macbeth into his movie Ron. And, the Shakespeare experience, it fit in the samurai period, and it kind of showed that universal nature of humanity that mm-hmm. is a shared experience. You see that in design motif, and that just keeps on repeating the world over, and I think it speaks to that we share more in common than we do differences. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are plenty of differences, and it's not to diminish that,
mm-hmm.
but it almost feels like that those differences are just more of like a regional flavor as opposed to just being vastly different. It's basically Pepsi and Coke.
Right.
Pick which one.
Yeah.
It's, mm-hmm. They're both doing the same. What role does an artist, or in this case, storytelling artist, have in society?
Well, we like to think that we want to rule it because we keep all the stories.
Yeah.
But, the role can be vast and it can be minor. In societies, in history, storytellers are always recognized as the keepers of all the story. They are the wisest. They hold the key to all of our history, and they have to pass it down. So in society and in our community, anywhere in our tribe, we like to think, put us way up here because mm-hmm. we have all of it.
Right.
And if we don't have it, it will eventually come up to us and we'll get to know all of it because we keep it all.
Right.
And in society, we have to figure out, okay, who are we going to give it to next? If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I truly believe storytelling is a calling.
Yeah.
Anybody can read a story and then give you a synopsis of it. like I just did of the warrior story. It's not the whole drawn out story, but I just gave you the few pieces to get the idea.
Right.
So I think where we're at there in society is everybody knows we're important and the information we have is vital to the continuation of us going and living. But everybody still has that stereotype or thinking that storytelling's for children.
Yeah.
So it stops.
Well, I know that for storytellers, the repository of knowledge and shared knowledge that was like, I mean, that was like the traditional form of not just of Native American tribes, but of the world over, you know, that like storytellers were like, you had an apprentice that went with a master from a very young age until adulthood, and they had to be able to recite these stories without flaw, mm-hmm. and how important it was to the culture, and to kind of almost be like a lighthouse for the soul of the people,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. to remind them of where they come from.
And yes.
I mean, that's kind of how I've taken mythology in general, is that these are, you know, not, or even like religious stories, it's not that they're wrong in the sense that they're like fallacies or myth or something that's just to make you feel warm and fuzzy inside, but that these are stories of people who have done these things, who have come to the rocks before you, and
right.
to give you warning about how to avoid the struggles of life, mm-hmm. and how to move about in life.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like, you know, storytellers are definitely a very important aspect mm-hmm. of society. It reminds them of their soul in a mm-hmm. sense.
Mm-hmm.
How do the ancestors inspire you?
Oh, gosh. You know, every time I tell a story, my first thought is, especially if it's a traditional story, or, and when I say traditional, I mean a Native story, because I know the stories we tell today have adapted and changed over time. But when I tell it, my first thought is, I wonder how old this story is. You know, we have to trace it back and follow it back, and that's probably one of my personal goals, is I want to trace back at least one story and see how yeah. far back I can find it and say, look at how old this story is. My ancestors, I think they inspire me to do good.
Yeah.
They were great stewards of what we have, of our earth. They had it when I believe it was at its purest. You know, and now today's world is just crazy and chaos, and we're putting trash in it. We're putting, you know, everything into the ground,
right.
even per se. And they inspire me by the way they lived, which is simple yet complex.
Yeah.
And I wish we could go back to that time, but still have the air conditioner.
Yeah, that's definitely a plus.
So that's how they inspire me. And then whenever I just see art depict, you know, your depictions of village life, or Mike Larson's, or anyone's depiction,
yeah.
I'm like, I wonder if that's what me and my daughter would look like. Or
yeah.
I wonder if that's what my family would look like if we were back in that time. It, you know, they inspire me to want to do what they did,
mm-hmm.
But better with the resources we have.
Yeah.
Today.
Well, I think that with a lot of the stories of, like, with the ancestors and with just in general, is, I mean, that the human experience, I think it comes back to that human experience mm-hmm. is shared. You know, the struggles of, like, oh, my kid doesn't want to get ready for school, or oh, they don't mm-hmm. want to do this, or, you know, oh, my God, I don't want to do this.
Right.
That, it's a shared experience, and I think that with storytelling and what you do, it gives humanity to mm-hmm. the ancestors. And maybe, yeah, in some respects, we have to add a bit of mythology to give deeper nuance and meaning to the works. But in some of these stories that you've talked about in there, you give an element of humanity in the questions you ask. You know, I think that that's a different... That's a, how do I put it? It is a, it gives depth to the way you tell stories, is that you're giving more than the myth. You're giving of in a sense, I'm paraphrasing here, but they're almost giving a sense, well, they also were wearing a blue shirt and they liked Mentos. You know, it's the subtle, it's the subtle things that bring out, I think, the humanity, that these were real people, you know, and I appreciate that in your storytelling, that it definitely gives it a measure of deeper humanity, and so that, you know, they can see, you know, that's what I try to put in my paintings as almost a, you know, one of the things I really appreciated about Norman Rockwell, his work, was that he gave just simple moments, you know, beauty, and it wasn't always these grand scenes of destruction or chaos or, you know, it's just these serene little moments of life, and
anyone's life. Yeah, anyone could relate to it. Mm-hmm.
What is a dream project that you haven't been able to approach yet?
Well, one is, I always say I have one teacher, I have many mentors. And working on different things with Greg Rogers or with Tim Tingle, who have already published books, has kind of interest me now, and probably for a while. And so a dream project would be for me to do something similar to what Tim has done, which he wrote, you know, Walking the Choctaw Road, where he actually went back to the Choctaw homelands, and they still have Choctaws who live there. So he was able to go back and talk to them about their stories and trace them back. And this was the version then, this is the version now, and this is our story. Where I tell stories, and there are some that I'm able to say this is a Chickasaw story, or but there are others I have to say it's a Southeastern story because we all tell it.
Yeah.
But not one person can claim the origin, I guess you could say. So that's one of my biggest goals, is to do some sort of compilation of Chickasaw stories.
Yeah.
Trace them back, if I'm able to, and give it an origin, and just have it for my daughter, for your daughter, for everybody's, and go, look, this was ours. I don't care if it's four stories.
Yeah.
At least we would have something.
It's a collective.
Yes. And so I'm really wanting to do something like that. I know it's not right for us to be envious or jealous of things, but you know, there are some tribes out there who are able to do that, and it's like, oh, wow. If we could do that, that would be amazing.
It is, and I think that you know, we definitely have a struggle ahead of us, just because of so much time and the ether of history has kind of put a haze over so much that it is. I think that this ties in with you being a good ancestor is like making a repository of Chickasaw knowledge to go along with just not only Southeastern knowledge, but to try finding a very specific tribal narrative is because we are very much like our Nafki and Antique, our brothers and sisters of you know, the different nations, the Chada, the Mushkogi Creek, the Seminole, and all of them. We have deep ties and deep relations, and our stories are evidence of that, but there is something beautiful that when you can stumble upon something that really is a pure Chickasaw thing, you know, it's like, oh,
it's ours.
This is the story my grandmother, our ancestors told, and I have a project that I hope to get taken care of. That's a book that is in that same realm. What food, drink, or song inspires you?
Ooh. I'm probably more inspired by song. Oh gosh, it's probably best if I could describe the song, you know, because songs, you know, all have a story. And I guess it's just that one that grabs you. Any good love song inspired me, because I love telling the love stories as well. I am a girly girl and love the fairy tales. But I know fairy tales are simply stories too. So, I get, and right now I, you know, the songs of the faith, I
Yeah.
guess, you know, the creator, the higher power, how strong it is, stronger than we will ever be. And, you know, you're with that faith, you're able to do, you know, anything.
You can
So,
move mountains.
right. And so, when I hear our elders sing our hymns, in the, of course, we sing them in the Choctaw language. Some will translate it to Chickasaw, but, and I don't know all the words in the language, but there are a few that I recognize. So when I hear them, that inspires me.
Yeah.
That really gets me going too. Gets the juices flowing. It like re-energizes me, and
Yeah. You definitely need that
yeah,
revivifying
you
type of
do,
stuff.
you do. Because even though I love storytelling or I love beadwork, I love it. If I take a break from it, then I miss it. But then that one storytelling session I do with kids or with a group of people, and I'm really getting into it, I leave that place just like, okay, where's the next group? I
Yeah.
mean, you do have to be re-energized at times,
Yeah.
just to remember this is why I do it.
Yeah.
This is it. This is why.
What do you hope for the future in your field? Like in the next 20 years, how do you want to see the legacy of what you've been doing? How do you hope to see the future of this field and maybe for the people as a whole?
In this field, I guess one of the biggest things that always gets me is when we're asked to come storytell. And don't get me wrong, I love storytelling to our kids. I love it. But adults need stories too. And I think I would really love for people, when they go to a storyteller, they don't just come to me and then leave their kids here and then go do something and come back and pick up their child. Because I think both could learn from that story. If anything, it's a moment together.
Yeah, there
It's
is
a
that.
memory. It's something together. So, you know, stories are for everyone. Everyone gets a different lesson out of it. It depends on what season they are in at that time. Also, I just hope there is a we have a good, strong grouping of native tellers. I would love to see a native organization of storytellers, because it's really difficult and challenging to find one that you can. That's and we're all booked all the time because, well, there's not very many of us. Or I say there's not very many of us, but you know, we're few and far between. So I would love to see a huge group, a strong group, an active group of native storytellers.
Well, maybe you're the seed that needs to.
Somebody has said that
I get that a lot. I have a lot
before.
of these ideas and projects. Like one of them that I feel is very strongly about is the traditional tattooing and that kind of reasserting the connections and what it provides to it and how a lot of that is does relate to storytelling. I get told, well, you know, you should start it. You should start it. And I need another 18 hours in a day
Right,
to do
yes.
all these projects.
Yes.
So, what are some ways that a storyteller could become successful and not only that, enjoy the process? I know that there's so many artists that feel like they know they've made it when they no longer enjoy doing it. But what are some healthier ways that artists, these storytellers, can? I know for me, it was when I had teachers that showed me how to create for myself and find my own joy from it, and that kind of techniques that they showed me kind of push me along that when I start to feel the mundane, it's not to say that it's always, you know, sunshine and lollipops. I'm always designing, oh, it's great, it's great. You know, there is a lot of monotony, but how do you kind of, would you tell an apprentice coming up how that they can become successful at it? And like, what kind of pragmatism they need?
I guess I would have to ask them first, and which I do ask some first, well, define what your success is. Are you wanting to do storytelling so that, you know, you're rich and you're able to do things without worry of you know, where you're going to pay your next bill from? Or is it for that self-gratification that you want? Because that self-gratification is the one I can help you with. Being an artist is always a struggle, no matter what discipline it's in. And storytelling is no different. Now, for me, I'm always learning, so I don't ever feel like, oh, I've been telling stories for decades, so I'm good. I'm where I'm at. I'm good. Because I think when I think that, then I need to quit. Then there's something going on if I think I cannot learn any more. But professionally as a storyteller, one of the gratifying things for me was actually the day I got a phone call from Craig and Tim.
Oh, really?
And they wanted me to be on the panel and a part of the very first Native Storytellers and Writers Conference that used to take place years ago. Of course, at this time, I did not know, really didn't know Greg at all. I was just talking on the phone. And then he says, oh, I have Tim Tingle here. And he, you know, just loves your storytelling and just thinks you're fabulous. And, of course, that's when I was like, Tim Tingle knows me? Are you kidding? My name? So I was like, wow, wow.
I've
made it. If Tim Tingle knows me.
Because
Tim is, you know, everywhere. He's traveled everywhere. And there's a lot of storytellers who have done that. And you have your favorites or you have the ones you aspire to be like. But yeah, Tim for me is like, wow, I want to do that one day. And then whenever I got that phone call. So if it's a self-gratification that you walk out of that room feeling good about what you did, then yeah, I can help you with that one. But if you're wanting something more, then I think you need to go somewhere else to work with somebody different than with me. Because I want, when I teach an apprentice or when I'm helping with apprentices, I want them to leave away with more of the pride of passing down that story or of sharing with someone. Or I want them to be able to connect with someone in that audience and know they touched them in some way, that they brought back a good memory, and they're leaving with that. Because I have done that a few times. I've told stories, and an older woman came up to me, and she said, you know, and it wasn't even a Native story. It was a scary story. Actually, it was one of our scary stories. And she just said, you know, my grandfather used to tell me that story when I was little. And he told it to us all the time. And, you know, so I saw her go back to a little girl. And she was just smiling. And I thought, oh, I don't care what happens the rest of the night, that this right here was a success for me. And so, you know, whenever I see success, I think I found it. Do I want to do more? Yeah, I always want to do more.
Well, I think that you're staying hungry in the sense of, you know, you're creatively staying young. And, what is that old saying? Those that think they know, don't. And those that know that they don't, know. And that is a very true form. I feel like I will always be an apprentice. I'll never be a master. It'll always elude you. But I think it should be that way. I think the moment you feel like you learn it all, that you stop being, oh, this is what I'm doing and this is what I did. And that's not good. But, you know, I think that success, you're right. You know, there are multiple forms of success. And I don't mean to approach the question in the sense of, like, you know, tell them the get rich quick scheme. But I feel like if you are being able to teach art, these stories and connect with folks, that a form of success, financial, whether it be this is how I can make a 9 to 5, this is how I can do that is also a measure of success. You know, I myself, I don't have, I'm not living fancy, I'm not doing anything like that, but the fact that I'm able to pay my bills as an artist, that is a measure of success that so many other people, it eludes them. And I think that would maybe be a question that, you know, how would you answer that? Is what would you recommend for a storyteller that, you know, like I said, isn't going to try to get that private jet so much as how would you recommend, like, a native storyteller get the ball rolling so that maybe they could get or be enticing to get employment?
You have to find what I will always refer to is their bread and butter. And a storyteller's bread and butter is storytelling for libraries and schools. Granted, now with schools and their budgets,
Schools have
it's
budgets?
well, you know, at one time they did.
They used to have art
They
classes
used
too.
to, yeah, but you're able to, you know, to get out there. And if you have to do some pro bono, at least you get your name out there.
So you would, like, say a lot of, like, volunteering stuff for communities and.
Volunteering stuff, yes. And then also storytelling when you're in front of everybody is a performance. So do some of those classes or community programs where they do perform performances to learn that stage presence of it. Because then, one, still you're getting your name out there, and then work with another storytelling organization. There may not be a lot of native storytelling organizations, but every state, I can say, has a storytelling organization that's part of a national organization. And then that state has liaisons that can get you connected with other storytellers. Become a part of that little community. Because they always have places. And then, you know, the main thing is to get your name out there.
It feels like a definite sense of tenacity and being able to take rejection.
Yes. And then, and it's hard. It's work. And then the day will come, you get your phone call from Greg Waters and Tim Tingle to be a part of a panel. And but I do Territory Tellers here in Oklahoma, and so I do that. And they always have quarterly meetings where, or month, yeah, quarterly meetings where, you know, we have a meeting of the board members, but then that night we'll do stories, and that's the perfect place to tell a story and fail because you're just practicing a new story. But they always book us in the libraries maybe that night, or you know, somewhere for the public to come. And you never know, that one person is going to hear you that's going to go, oh, hey, we have an event. I wonder if they would come. So, you know, always play, have your A game going. And then, because that's how I've been contacted usually is, oh, I went to this story slam and you told this story. And I want, are you available on? And so, and then, you know, you can work out your deal and, making sure you're fair to yourself in pricing, but not so cheap that, you know, it's going to be, oh, you're already going to be out money because of your drive there, or you had to stay in the hotel here, or you know, but be fair. Because granted, like I said, a lot of places their budgets have been cut or are non-existent now. So funding is not really there now. So, you know, I would go to schools and if it was a school I went to and have been going to for a long time and I knew they were struggling, even today, I don't even charge them. I don't even charge them now.
Before we wrap up, what are some places that folks can see you, or they could maybe purchase, like, a book, if you have one out just yet?
I do not have a book out just yet. Right now, we are getting ready for our spooky tales, in October. Some of our other events I am not participating in, because we just did the Chickasaw Children's Festival at the Cultural Center on the, I think it was the 23rd or 21st. So Spooky Tales is probably our next big event, and the dates will be coming out soon, and they're usually the 2 weeks before Halloween. This year we're going to have one in Tishomingo on the Capitol grounds.
Nice.
We'll be at Boggy Depot again, which is a great place if you love spooky stories, if you love Bigfoot stories, because the residents there who have lived there and grown up there actually come and share their stories
Oh, really?
about Bigfoot or ghost stories. So that's at Boggy. And then we'll be at the Cultural Center, which is one of our shorter shows, because they put us right before the movie of the evening. And then our big show, what we refer to as our big show, will be in Ada. And we're actually having to move it to a new venue because we're
Really?
getting too big.
That's a good problem to have.
So now, yes. And this is when we dress up, and we encourage others to dress up. If you bring your kids, dress up. But of course, also know these are spooky stories.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to
They're
have some
jump
shorties that
stories.
are going to be jumping
Yeah,
into the skin.
they are jump stories. So, spooky story time is one of our favorite times to tell, because we can tell the native scary stories that I grew up with that still scare me today, and then the old campfire stories as well.
Lori, I really appreciate you coming on tonight. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope to have you on again
Oh,
whenever you're
sure.
doing your book is out. I would love to have you on board, and we'll talk about that too.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lori, for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Till next time, Chapisola Cho.